Okay. So, again, within cellular systems, where exactly you are within a cell is going to determine sort of the strength of the signal. And we can vary that somewhat by altering the amount of power we use to transmit said signal. Okay. Communication occurs in sort of both uplink and downlink directions, as we said before. And it's easier or harder to control power, depending. So what are the issues? What phases of power management decisions made? Well, we have to have our received power to be sufficiently above the background noise for effective communication. And again, that's varying with the distance from the base station and also other small scale effects, etc. And then we also need to minimize power to reduce our co-channel interference. Again, we made an assumption previously that all of our stations were transmitting at the same power level, but if that's not true, then you could potentially be messing around with that, with channel interference. And also, we want to try and save on battery power. And so those issues are important within our orthogonal system, and as we've noted before, within CDMA systems, they become even more critical. We need to equalize the received power from all of our mobile units to the base station, and that is so that the base station can then distinguish between individual signals. Okay. So two classes of power control exist, open loop and closed loop. Open loop is going to be dependent solely on the mobile. And so no feedback from the base station. Okay, so the mobile then has to sort of estimate the quality of the channel, where it is relative to the base station, and adjust power accordingly. Again, for thinking about CDMA systems, the base station is going to emit a pilot signal, and that will provide timing for CDMA communication calls. CDMA also has to be synchronized so that you're not getting inter-symbol interference. And reference phases for demodulation, etc. But the mobile can also use that to estimate to measure the power level of the signal from the base station, and then can employ what's called the channel inversion technique, which is to set the transmitter power inversely proportional to the received power. So the lower your received power, you assume you're, well, the worse your channel quality, either because you're far from the base station or just bad channel, and you assume that it's the same in the reverse direction, so you want to increase the power at which you send. Okay, so if everybody does that at the same way and all those assumptions are true, then again, the signals received at the base station will be at roughly the same power level. Okay. We can also use closed-loop power control. And here, the base station can also make calculations about power. And so, if he was using metrics provided by the mobile unit, and so the mobile unit can make its decisions in reflection and inversion techniques, but based on feedback from the user, the base station can also adjust its signaling. So if the channel is poor, it can change, it can increase the power at which it's transmitting sort of specific signals. And as we've said before, that this is particularly important in CDMA systems. So if the signals are not received at the same level, then it becomes hard to distinguish the weaker signals. Okay, so that's referred to as the near-far problem. So if the cause again is the distance, so if you're close, your signal is potentially much stronger than somebody who's far away, and so this is going to cause trouble in interpreting the signals. And we address that again by using our channel inversion techniques. Obviously, using these techniques does have drawbacks. In particular, say your user is at the edge of the cell, then they're transmitting to their base station at a higher power level, but they're also transmitting into adjacent cells at a higher power level as well, so they're causing more interference than within adjacent cells. So it's a problem that's relatively straightforward to solve for a single cell or within a single cell, but sort of as a system, finding the optimal power allocation is problematic. Okay. So we've designed our systems. We've decided how many cells we have within our clusters, how are we reusing things, how many cells we have within our clusters, further impacted on how many channels, we saw that determined how many channels we had within our system. So the next question is, how many users then can you accommodate given a certain number of channels, so given certain resources? Okay. So we're going to assume that the number of channels is fixed. And it should be obvious that we're going to have more users in it than channels, okay, physically in a cell. But we can also assume that not all of the users are going to be making calls at the same time. I guess that we all have our mobiles with us, but we're not all making calls. Okay. So these sorts of systems have been examined since the early 1900s, when Erlang first developed his theories for circuit switch architecture, so for telephone networks and for telephone switches. So what we're going to do is look at now how that impacts on cellular systems, what we can see about, say, about cellular systems.
Okay.
So here we're holding resources for a certain period of time. And the traffic intensity is a measure of the use of any given resource. Okay. So the average channel occupancy, sort of as a percentage of time, gets expressed in what are called Erlangs. Okay. Now, there's three sort of equivalent definitions of traffic intensity. It's the average number of simultaneously busy channels. So if you have multiple channels, you can sort of take a snapshot and look at, on average, how many of them are busy. So you can think that's a measure of sort of how often things are used. You can look at this taking a snapshot in time. You can look at this over time. And it's the ratio of the sum of busy times of the channel to the observation channels, plural, to the observation time. And another way of looking at it is it's the average number of calls that you can make in the time it takes to complete one call. And so if you think about it, again, they're all, again, this measure of busyness. If you think about having one channel, for instance, well, it's either busy or it isn't, so your average is somewhere between 0 and 1. And the likelihood of hitting anywhere is sort of, you can think of it as a time average of what proportion of the time is your channel busy. And again, if you think about it being a single channel being occupied for a certain amount of time, then on average how many extra calls will be coming in? You better hope it's less than one, or you're never going to cover all the required calls. Okay, so that's just sort of, again, three ways of looking at this measure of busyness.
Why do we worry about that? Well, mainly because the busier the system, the more likely it is that somebody will arrive to find no resources available.
So, as an example, suppose we have 20 calls per minute and the average holding time is 3 minutes. Then our traffic intensity is 60, and we can calculate that as the average number of calls attempted during one call. Okay, so one call is 3 minutes long. We have 20 calls per minute, so we're going to attempt 20 calls per minute, or 60 over a 3 minute period. And so the question is, what capacity do we need in this system? Well, it should be pretty clear we need at least 60 channels. The problem with having 60 channels exactly is the demand is not completely predictable. It's not like it's everybody's coming, marching in at that rate. This is an average. These are average rates. And sometimes you get more than that, sometimes you get less than that. So when you get more than that, if you only have 60, you're definitely going to not have enough resources. Okay, so you can just throw resources at the problem, and you can do twice what's required, and that would probably, almost all the time, be great, but then your resources aren't going to be fully utilized. So you're only going to, on average, you're only using each resource half the time. Okay. So typically, you observe. You decide how many resources you need by observing traffic over some period of time, usually a day, maybe a week, just to sort of get the variation in days of the week, and then you provision for your peak traffic load as you would observe over whatever period of time. Add in a little bit of extra, but possibly still within that, you're not going to cover every possible case of use. So at some point, you're going to have more demand than
you have resources. Okay. So there's this whole theory about relating your demand to the resources available and determining the probability of blocking, so the probability that your demand will exceed the number of resources available. Okay. So trunking refers to the idea of sharing the resources among the users and being able to have more users than you have resources.
Typically, in our radio system, the resources are going to be a pair, so an uplink and a downlink. So, again, no matter how many resources you throw at the problem, as long as there are more users than resources, there's some probability that a user won't be able to access a resource when they request it. And so we're going to assume that if they don't get the resource immediately, then they're lost.
Okay. So we want to relate these three quantities, the number of resources, the demands of the user, and the probability of blocking. Okay.
So the probability of blocking or not blocking is referred to as grade of service. And Sorry, do you have a question? And it's a basic parameter or benchmark for cellular system design. So it's the basic measure of capacity for our cellular systems. Okay, so we're using what's called the Erlang-B model, and the Erlang-B model relates exactly the quantities we've talked about, the probability of loss for greater service, the demand, the traffic intensity, and the number of channels or resources that we have available to meet that demand. We don't derive this, but there's a formula relating those three quantities. And you're not usually going to explicitly calculate it or try and solve for any given function, because, you know, again, one common question is we have an offered load or traffic intensity and walk a greater service, what's n? And you can see that that would be relatively stressful to try and solve that equation for n. The results are available in tabular or graphical form, or, you know, go to the internet and the calculators.
You can get either tables or graphs to compare the three quantities. Okay. So,
what we'll see here, just because it's graphical, is we'll have a look at. The table, but we'll have a look at graphs of the results, and they plot traffic intensity versus probability of blocking, and you'll see that there's a curve then for each possible number of channels. So usually, again, we have fixed our, in this sort of scenario, we fixed our grade of service. This is a requirement for us. And then we play off the traffic intensity and the number of channels.
Okay, so here we have the graph, and again we see we have along the x-axis we have our traffic intensity, along the y-axis we have our probability of blocking, and that's a long scale. And you can, as you might expect, if we fix a probability of blocking, then the greater the traffic intensity, the more channels you're going to require to get to that probability of blocking. Say the traffic intensity, then depending on how many channels you have, you're going to get, again, different probabilities of blocking. So we can, again, compare these three factors. So one interesting result is that
single large capacity system is more efficient than multiple small capacity systems in giving a specific grade of service. And so we'll look at an example. We can have two cells with a capacity of 10 channels each, or one cell with a capacity of 20 channels. And then we can ask for the grade of service. How much traffic can each of those setups handle?
Answer. So, we see our horizontal line here is our grade of service.
And then we either have 10 channels, which we can call it into here, which gives us a traffic intensity of 3.4, or we have 20 channels. That's this one, I hope. Yes, this one. And then follow that down, and we get traffic intensity of 10. Okay. Now, again, you have two cells of 10 each, so you can double the traffic intensity, so you've got 6.4, but that's still going to be less than 10.
And again, that shouldn't be terribly surprising
in the sense that, again, we can't sort of necessarily distribute the users evenly over the two cells, and so your 10 channel cells, you don't have the capacity to share. Once you go over 10, you don't have the capacity to share out channels, so it shouldn't be terribly surprising that the 20 works better.
Okay, now on the flip side of that, large capacity systems are more sensitive to increases in traffic.
So, we'll look at 10 now and 70 channels. And grade of service of 0.002 gave us a load of 3.4 airlines. And so the question is, how much traffic would you need to reduce our grade of service to 0.01, for instance? And then we can look at the same thing for 70 channels.
Okay,
and so we have two grades of service, so 0.002 and 0.01, and then she can follow, this is for 10, so follow this down, and so you have to move from the traffic intensity 3.4 to
4.4 to change the grade of service, and that's roughly a 30% increase.
Now, if we look at 70 channels, and so we get a traffic intensity of 51 for grade of service of 0.002, and then a traffic intensity of 56 for a grade of service of 0.01.
And so again, as a percentage, that's closer to 10% than 30. It's 11% for, as opposed to the 30% for the smaller capacity systems. weekend. So essentially,
what that indicates is that it takes longer to get to the blocking conditions for large systems, but once you're up and around there, then, again, you're still any tip over from that, and so at any increased capacities, it causes the same problems, but the increased capacity is a smaller percentage of the overall capacity than it is here.
But for a smaller system. Okay. So again, you'll see some tutorial problems where you can work out, play around with these sorts of results. And those results, they applied this Erlang B formula directly. One issue we have with cellular systems is that the measure of traffic we have is in terms of requests and call completions, but for cellular systems, those values, you can't necessarily assume that you're going to stay in the same system, in the same cell. So your arrival rate is composed of new calls plus handovers. And similarly, your completion rate is comprised of completions plus handovers. So that affects, again, the traffic intensity of any cell, and so you have to have some way of accounting for the new values, and typically they're addressed, again, for simulation rather than these direct calculations. But it's always worth sort of thinking about the calculations as at least a first cut on system capacity. Okay. So the final question we'll ask, is there anything we can sort of do within this design to try and increase capacity? And so essentially increase the density of channels that you have. Okay. So we can try messing around with our channel assignments. Okay. And you can do that sort of either within a cell or overall. So essentially you can either not in it, you can sort of in a fairly fixed way allocate certain cells more channels. So if you know that people congregate in a certain area, you give more channels to that area and less to others. And so again, you can do that sort of in a pre-planned or dynamic fashion. Those tend to cause headaches in the end. You can also try to change your cell layout. So we can perform cell splitting, so we can subdivide congested cells into smaller cells, and then again share the resources within the smaller units. So if you have 10
channels covering a single cell, and then you split that into four subunits or four subclusters of 10 channels each, then you can increase the channel density, so the channel per square area. This one's so far that can go. You can do cell sectoring, so instead of using omnidirectional antennas, you can aim your antennas in various, wedges of the cell, and what that's going to do is it's going to decrease your signal to interference ratio, because only some of them will be pointed in the direction of any other cell. And moving on from that, the slight refinement of that is microcell zones, where we take these sectorized antennas, and instead of radiating out from the center, they point inwards. And that allows the better control of the channels within the cell. We'll go over those techniques in a minute. And again, each of those is sort of a single cell basis, and then sort of overall, again, you can try sort of altering sort of multiple cells at the same time and messing, changing channel assignments, etc., for multiple cells. Okay, so this is probably too much information on channel assignments, but again, the thing to think about with channel assignment is it can either be done sort of on a sort of non-dynamic or a dynamic basis. And so the simplest thing to do is just to, again, realize that certain cells are more congested than others and allocate them more resources. And the benefit of that is you can, again, analyze how that impacts on signal interference sort of the system as a whole. We can do simple borrowing where adjacent cells can share channels, and you have to then keep a record of where each of the channels is being used. And so the problem with this is it can benefit if you have sort of temporary sort of congestion, but if you have sort of increased demand sort of over the entire area, then this will actually lead to a greater probability of blocking for the area overall. Okay, and you can try to come up with some combination of the two where you keep some channels to yourself and share others. Okay, and if you can then change how many of channels you have in either category. But in general, these tend to sort of run into problems just because of the dynamic nature of the traffic. Okay. So that was sort of the system trying to swap around channels to meet sort of global congestion patterns. Another possibility is that we sort of do away entirely with the idea of base stations having fixed channel sets, and we just allocate channels on a call-by-call basis, so each time a user wants the resources, they can request them, and they're allocated on an as-needed basis. And so obviously the benefit of that is that as long as there's a resource somewhere in the system, you can give it to the user. The problem with this is that it's very hard then to determine things like signal interference ratios, because, you know, again, instead of having the channels in nice fixed locations, they're moving all over the system. So that sort of thing, it's been tried, and it works for relatively low light capacities, but for heavy loads, it becomes non-optimal. Okay. And so, again, you can try and come up with some combination of fixed and dynamic strategies, so you can leave some channels within the cell, and then allow the MSC to assign the remaining channels. Okay, and we can either do that in a dynamic or a sort of pre-planned fashion. Okay, so again, it's still, all of these still have the drawbacks of dynamic channel allocation. That's very hard to sort of manage that form of allocation. Okay, and that's just a graphical representation of everything we just discussed. Okay. So another way to sort of try and increase capacity is to split congested cells into more smaller cells. And so then if you have a certain number of channels in a cell, and you can then assign those to multiple smaller cells, then again, you've increased your channel density. So any given spot has more channels available. So for this, we keep the reuse factor the same. So as you saw before, you had cells of a certain size, and then they're just shrinking the size, and so there are more cells per physical area. While the channels within each, the channel allocation within each cell remains the same. So if we have Earth, if we're thinking of diamond shape, if we have our cell radius, then we need four smaller cells. And each of those cells is going to have the same number of channels in it. And we can reduce our transmit power, and then just because we only need to sort of reach the cell boundary and overcome noise. The main drawback to that approach, obviously, if we could do it, that's perfect. But the problem is that you need a new base station for each new cell, and so there is some limit to how many base stations
you can provide. Okay. And so again, we see, as we saw before, if each cell is split into four, we can use the same channel allocation. And so if we have 10 channels per cell, we now have 10 channels per cell. And so over the same space, we have 40 channels. Now they're not shared, so again, we have, that's again slightly less efficient than providing 40 channels in a single cell, but at least, but you do have many more channels to play with. Okay, so every time we have our cell radius, we can reduce the power by 1/2 to gamma, and then we increase the capacity by, well, whatever the basic cluster size was raised to the factor of n. Okay. So, again, the problem with that is, well, we can't decrease our transmission power forever, and we don't have an unlimited capacity to keep adding new base stations. Also, as we shrink our cell size, handover becomes more of an issue. As you're moving through more and more zones if you're on the move, and so you think handover is taking an order of seconds, and so if your zones are too small, you can potentially move through a zone before they have completed handover. Okay, so cell sectoring and microcell zones try to keep the cell size the same while sort of reducing your signal to interference ratio. Again, they do that by using sectorized antennas. Okay. So, cell sectoring divides our cells into wedges and divides the cell's channels equally, usually equally among the wedges. Okay. So typically you have something like 120, 60, maybe 45. So 120 would give us three sectors for our cell. So, if we do that, then what we've done is we've reduced the number of neighboring clusters that interfere with our channel. So. Consider a channel in this sector, then none of these cells now interfere with it. You see they're obviously pointing out in the opposite direction. These two cells still provide interference. Okay. And so if we reduce our signal interference, we should we can possibly reduce n, the number of cells per cluster,
And if we reduce the number of cells per cluster, we increase the number of channels in any given cell. Okay, so that's the idea. The cost is that you have triple the number of antennas. And we've also increased the amount of handover because we're not going to have to hand over within the cell as we go from antenna to antenna to antenna. Okay. We've also, again, split our channels amongst more split our channels into more separate regions. So again, we'll see as we said before, that has a reduction of efficiency. So being able to share a number of channels in a larger region is more efficient than being able to than assigning one third to each smaller regions. Okay. The only exception to that is if you can assume that your users are going to be sort of evenly distributed throughout the cell. Okay. So we've reduced the number of interfering cells from 6 to 2, and so that will give us a separate factor for N. And so if we sort of fix numbers, so fix gamma and fix our desired signal to interference ratio, then just if you work it out, then you can see that for the sectorized system, we have an N of 4. For the omnidirectional system, we would have an N of 14. Okay. What that means is that within our cell, we're going to be able to get a lot more channels. So you're omnidirectional, you're dividing the channel set into 14 pieces for the sectorized system, you only have to divide it into 4. Okay. Okay, and we can further, I think the problem to think about, we can further look at then what exactly that means for capacities with given grades of service. Okay. So almost final improvement on that, or final improvement on that particular concept, is to use what are called microcell zones. And so before we had our antennas facing outwards from the cells. Now we point the antennas inwards. We arrange the antennas at the edges of the cells and point them inwards. And so now we allow the users to retain the same channel as they travel from one zone to the next, as determined by the base station. So this gives us the same sort of reduction in the, or improvement, I should say, in the signal to interference ratio. And it eliminates the need for handovers within a single cell.
Is that what is typically employed today?
They're arranged on the edges pointing inwards. Okay, and just to, again, not forget about CDMA, with CDMA, again, the signal to interference ratio is not just coming from outside the cell, but inside as well. And the only way to sort of handle that is to sort of reduce the number of users within a given cell, and we can do that by essentially changing the radius of the cell. So if you have too many users in a cell, you shrink the radius, and obviously you have to increase the radius of neighboring cells. And so this provides a way of sharing, sort of trying to even out the sort of users, the capacity within separate cells, and by doing that, sort of again control the amount of interference within a given cell. Okay, so that's it. I wanted to leave you with a problem, but I'm not sure if I can find it. May not be able to find it, in which case here we go. Okay, so I'll post this as well, but again, we get this problem sort of ties together a lot of the concepts we were using, we were discussing. And so, again, we just set up, we fix our signal to interference ratio and drop of the power and the number of channels we have. And then we ask, well, what would omnidirectional and sectorized systems look like? And so what's N? What's the cluster size for all of these? And then beyond that, we can ask, if we want a certain grade of service, what's the trunking efficiency for the for the different systems? So we'll think about that problem. I'll post it on Loop, and then we can take up with that next lecture. Okay, so I'll see you all next week.